Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is May 14th, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Greetings from Ayers Rock in Central Australia. I'll be here through the weekend and then back to Sydney on Sunday. I arrived in Sydney after 5 days of travel, 3 different canceled flights. Quite amazing experience. Thank you to strange weather in Dallas, weird weather for several days. Several events coming up. I'll be speaking at the University of Auckland Business School on May 23rd in Auckland, New Zealand, on the global rebalancing. I'll be over in New Zealand for a week, week after next, and then speaking on Planet Debt on June 2nd in Sydney. Speaking of Planet Debt, the PDF from the first quarter wrap-up and the flip chart book is now out. You can access them through the Subscriber Resource Center or at the blog post for Planet Debt for the first quarter wrap-up after you log in. Our team just did a tremendous job, and I strongly recommend you take a look. It's really an excellent presentation. Theme tonight is Trans-Pacific Partnership. I'm sure it's the talk of the town if you're in Washington. Yesterday, the Senate Democrats stopped the fast-track deal dead in its tracks. Senate Republicans revived it today. Fast-track would allow the president to submit the trade accord to Congress for a yay or nay, 0-1 vote with no amendments, which is seen as crucial as having if you're going to get it passed. The way the Senate Republicans revived it is they attached it to a different bill that was intended to protect U.S. firms from both currency manipulation and unfair trade practices. One of the problems with it is if it passes in the right form, apparently White House officials are worried that the currency policies could be used against the Federal Reserve and other central banks challenging their currency manipulations as unfair trade practices. Now, that is a really interesting twist. You know, the rules are getting so ridiculous and so controlling and so hot and heavy, and there's so many of them that at some point I think the whole new world order is going to choke on itself. We've been working on a commentary overview of the Trans-Pacific Partnership to help you get a sense of what it is, what's involved in it, and what some of the greatest concerns. Of course, one of them is that the agreement has essentially been kept a secret with the exception of a few leaks on different parts of it and far from the whole, if you look at all the different parts of the agreement. The other thing is, along with other trade agreements, this is not the only one, it's going to continue the ability of large corporations to override federal, state, and local laws without the authorizing legislators agreeing to it. You know, it's basically abrogating, you know, the entire governance system of the United States. The measure faces a much rockier road in the House, and we see a lot of Democrats and Republicans lining up to oppose it. So this is going to get really interesting. And of course, the administration is pushing hot and heavy. Money and markets. Let me review a roundup of the markets, but just note that I'm using the U.S. Wednesday close. It's Thursday evening in Australia, but it's 2 a.m. on Thursday in the United States, so the markets haven't opened yet today. The U.S. dollar index continues to fall. It's now at 93.5. It's still up about 4% for the year, but it continues to look weak. Oil now flat, having risen back up to, well, it went up to 61 yesterday and then softened to 60s right after the Saudis took another whack. You're wondering if it was an honest whack or the Americans just asked them to jaw the price down. I call it whacking fracking. They said their strategy of squeezing high-cost rivals such as the U.S. shale producers is succeeding, and they're just going to keep on pumping and make sure they're the dominant force in the global markets. Gold revived a bit. It's now up 2.6% for the year. Question is, are commodities reviving? They've just been in the basement, really gotten clocked hard. I think it's still too early to tell, but it's certainly worth noting everybody's looking for opportunity, and that's about the only opportunity on the horizon right now. But I Again, I just think it's too early. I talked about the race to call the top last week, but we posted the commentary on Monday with a great cartoon. It's the latest Soleri tune. I can't possibly express it in words. You got to go check it out. So just go to the homepage at Soleri.com and go down to the commentary, the race to call the top, and check out the tune. You'll get a big laugh. Okay, roundup of the equity markets. The German DAX is now up 18% for the year, down from approximately 30%. So the gains have been cut in half. Same thing happening in China, which has gotten hit hard this week, now up 18% for the year. The developed markets away from the United States up 11%. Emerging markets 8%. S&P now up 2% for the year. It's 1.9%, but we'll just round it off at 2. Who would have thought the emerging markets would be 600 basis points ahead of the S&P at this point? Unbelievable. The bond aggregate now down 0.5% for the year. TLT long treasury ETF down 6%. So the sort of the soft end, both of the dollar and the treasury market are really showing no strength. Flat retail sales offer no spring bounce, so we have more reports that U.S. retail sales were flat. And I think, you know, what's my bet is that the U.S. really was expecting a strong economy in the first quarter that would have given them the ability to pull the strong dollar card and run the bear trap. They don't have that, which means they're in a very weak position. And while the president is pushing hard for Trans-Pacific Partnership, John Kerry's racing around the globe trying to shut down multiple risks: Iran, Cuba, Russia, Ukraine. I don't know how they did it. Well, of course, I know how they did it. Ukraine is out of the headlines. It's like it doesn't exist almost. We see Kerry meeting with Putin yesterday. Not much headlines on that. Lot of talk, no agreements on anything. So who knows what will come out of that. Meantime, the Pope Francis is heading their hands back to the hardline Israelis in what is probably, from a diplomatic point of view, the greatest rebuke yet. So far this year, the Vatican is set to sign a new treaty with the Palestinian Authority in a move that would essentially recognize, apparently the official document recognizes Palestine as the state of Palestine. So between the Iran deal and Pope Francis, there's definitely a message going loud and clear to the hardline Israelis. Interesting, but certainly very nice to see, long overdue. There was an Amtrak train accident. Normally, I would never bring up such a thing. It was happened Tuesday night on the Washington to Philadelphia, New York line, right outside of Philadelphia on the way to New York. It's about 20 minutes north of 30th Street Station. 7 people have been killed, 8 seriously injured. The timing is more than a bit suspicious. The crash came a day before the House Appropriations Committee approved a transportation budget for the next fiscal year that was including a funding cut for Amtrak. The Democrats tried to push an amendment calling for $825 million in capital investment for PTC technologies for passenger rail. And it's called positive, PTC stands for positive train control. It's very suspicious. The amendment was blocked by the Republican majority, but it to get an accident like this coming into this kind of appropriation squabble that is directly on point to PTC technology, it's quite miraculous. Railroad stocks down sharply today. I'm sure there's a story, and I'm going to be looking for it. So if anybody sees anything, definitely send it in. A commentary we posted on slow burn stats, the case of the vanishing worker. Several more pieces this week, one in the Wall Street Journal about the extent to which employment data is manipulated. The slow burn depends tremendously on the manipulation of data. I always say whenever they say the tuna fish prices are not going up, that's because there's 20% less tuna in the can and you're 20% more likely to get sick from eating it. So, but another example of sort of how the slow burn gets engineered. Our hero this week is a Chinese billionaire. His name is Li Jinyuan, who treated 6,400 of his workers, that's his company employs 12,000 people, so it's slightly more than half, treated 6,400 of his workers to a trip to Paris and south of France. Now that's a company worth working for. Ask Catherine. A couple long ones because education always inspires some detail. Here we go. Dear Catherine, I've subscribed for about a year now, and the content has been a breath of fresh air because it actually has some practical, real-world-related content, unlike most alternative media. I heard you mention Common Core education a few times, and while it's true that the program is mostly about brainwashing, it's not a new program. The education system itself was formed by industrialists in the late 1800s. It had one function, protect capital investments by destroying the ability of the average person to become an entrepreneur. Think of it as reducing the equity of potential competitors by reducing them to employees and customers. School is an alternative to Orwell's perpetual war as a means of destroying human labor. I mention this partly because if I hear the word school used as a synonym with education, I will lose my mind, as if the purpose of a lab rat in a maze is to feed it cheese, but also because we're facing yet another industrial revolution right now, and their last play called for 12 to 16 years of mandatory Babylonian training for the young. I suspect the response now will be even more drastic. I would recommend you read Underground History of American Education by John Taylor Gatto or listen to any number of his lectures. This article is a good overview. And then he mentions some more. I agree essentially with everything this subscriber said. John Taylor Gatto is excellent. I can't recommend him highly enough. If you haven't had an opportunity to read that or listen to some of his interviews and speeches, he's a wonderful and highly successful teacher who decided to unpack the history of American education. It's quite fascinating. So thank you for reminding me to have him on. If he hadn't, Gatto's been disabled essentially by illness, and so I haven't had him on. But if that wasn't standing in the way, I would love to have him. Next question. I remember discussion you were having with Dr. Farrell. You said that you had begun to notice the signs of the 3.0 global economy around you as you drive around the country. He agreed. Can you describe what we should be looking for to observe this? Thanks. Take a look. You want to look for new investment. So you want to look at new office buildings. You want to look at new plants. You want to look at the development and growth of spaceports. And when I say plants, you're looking for very high-tech plants. So plants with robotics like the Gigafactory that the Tesla's building in Nevada. Infrastructure and investment and construction. Whenever you have a lot of investment going in, whether it's plants, whether it's spaceports, whether it's new office buildings, you'll see a lot of road and construction and other infrastructure to support this kind of investment. And then around it, you'll see high-end retail and housing. So you're talking about investments in facilities that require a lot of skilled labor and the compensation is quite good, and so you see the high-end retail and housing go in. And then, of course, you get tremendous traffic. But where you see those dense areas, then what I do is I watch the places and names, and I have a lot of background information on what their relationships are to the black budget and can trace them accordingly. So I have that help. Sometime what I'd love to do is do a road trip with a group of subscribers, and then we end up in a facility where we can draw a mural of how all these different civilizations can live side by side and pretend not to notice each other. It's quite remarkable. Good morning, Catherine. We are looking forward to your report this week. We haven't been following this Common Core issue, but we should. Now we will. Thank you for keeping people informed. We certainly live in interesting times. So much going on. Thank you for all you do. That's Diane and John Shear, who were the heroes last week. And if you didn't get a chance to watch it, watch a wonderful video I put up in Top Picks 2 weeks ago called E60 Shear about John Shear and his wife and what incredible people they are. I must tell you, when you become a Solaris subscriber, you join a group of people who are of the highest caliber. You know, I always say, I bet we know more about what's going on than the group at the World Economic Forum, for sure. Another one on Common Core. This is very relevant to Common Core. The basis of my questions are as a result of reading political scientist Wendy Brown's Political Theory, Undoing the Demos, Neoliberalism, Stealth Revolution, Critical Essays on Knowledge and Politics. This book should be required reading for people trying to understand our current crisis. In 2015, such as Common Core, book answers, where did all these hellish economic and government policy ideas spring from? Who are the political scientists worldwide who justified this? What is their philosophy and goals? How did this neoliberalism, which began being discussed in intellectual forums in the late 70s, remain hidden thereof, then shockingly rear its ugly head and stun Americans? We're now dealing with militarization, constant surveillance, the financialization of every aspect of our life, the historic inequality, and on it goes with no end. Since no president, senators, congresspeople ran or won from the neoliberal party with neoliberal policy initiatives, how did these laws become so entrenched into all aspects of local, state, and government laws and personal lives without the people knowing it? This book explains it thoroughly with its outstanding sourcing and footnoting question. What do you think about the new software apps to raise your kids based on the following major media headlines and products exposed in Wendy Brown's book, Programming Families, How Kids Are Just Like Software and What the Government Can Learn from It? It's based on a program called Agile, and families develop a family manifesto. Kids get to pick their own punishments. It's basically Microsoft's old project management software redesigned for raising a family. Some other disturbing product headlines, Raising Family Like Unfettered Chaos, Treat Your Kids Agile Like You Manage Software Developers. The person plugging this is Bruce Feeler. The New York Times features happy families using Agile to raise their children. This is madness and evil. Wait a minute. This is madness and evil. Children are not just like software. Software is not a human body. It has no heart, mind, soul, consciousness, creativity, empathy. Love your website and show. You've been my daily sources, the well of information for almost 12 years, as well as my inspiration. Thanks. I couldn't agree more. Children are not software. You know, the whole thing is so insane, you just almost don't even know where to start. More on that when we talk about the interview. Dear Catherine, do you believe if we had term limits for all members of Congress here in the U.S. that this would help us to weed out both a lot of the corruption and a lot of the unnecessary government spending, or do you believe that having term limits would really change, wouldn't really change much of anything? I think what would happen is you just get members who would lose power relative to the staff. I don't think it would get at the root of the problem. I do think, you know, you'll see a state like North Dakota where the legislature only meets every other year, and it's not the primary source of income to the legislators. I think it's one of the reasons North Dakota is one of the better managed states. So I'm not completely opposed to term limits, but I think you have to get at the heart of the real issues, including the black budget and the fact that, you know, the senators and congressmen have to do what the people who can kill with impunity say. And that's not going to change with or without term limits. Let's go to the movies. I repeated a documentary I've done once before. I think it's absolutely outstanding. If you haven't watched it, you want to buy it and get it. It's called The School, and it's about a real educational visionary who started a school in Russia where the children designed, built, and decorated their own campuses. They provide the majority of their own teaching staff. You just have to see it. You have to see it to understand what is possible, what the human race is capable of, and what a true education really looks like. And I agree, it's nothing like, you know, what we've had in this country for the last 100 years, and it's absolutely in a very inspiring a vision. And frankly, if you look at what's happening in the educational system in this country, we're going to have to go out and start lots of these schools and find a way to, even if we have to do them offshore, find a way to protect our children from what's about to happen. Our interview this week is with a wonderful educator, Anthony Cody, who wrote a book that I reviewed on the website. I've talked with you about it before. It's called The Educator and the Oligarch, A Teacher Challenges the Gates Foundation. Cody was a very successful teacher in the Oakland California school system for 24 years and started to try and engage in a very authentic way with the Gates Foundation to help them understand the, you know, the madness of their methods. And he assumed that they were sincere in wanting to improve education. And so he engaged with them sincerely, and it took many years, but finally realized, oh, you know, there's something wrong here. Now, here's what's interesting. When we sat down to write our blog post for this interview, one of my colleagues said to me, "This is crazy. I've been on the internet for 2 hours, and I literally can't get a basic introduction and overview of Common Core and what the problem is." And I think one of the reasons is that most people in education, and I'll say the same for healthcare when it comes to Obamacare, are dealing with what's happening as if it was something about healthcare and something about education. And I think it's very important to understand that federal mandates for healthcare and education are not designed primarily to achieve healthcare and educational goals. They are designed to achieve corporate privatization of trillions of dollars. You look at healthcare as a process, or thousands of different processes. Education the same. You break them down, you standardize them, you standardize the treatments, you standardize the curriculum. That makes it possible to re-engineer it into software and digital systems, and that way you can privatize it. Now, the problem with these two being the last two sort of health or major parts of local economies is you're going to have to mandate the consumer or the taxpayer to pay them. And so we have a situation where you're asking the federal government to pass laws requiring everybody to completely re-engineer how we do healthcare and education in this country to make it possible for private corporations to flip trillions of dollars of financial and economic flow through their balance sheets, through their income statements, and into their stock price. And if you look at exactly this thing of standardizing the process and then re-engineering it with software and digital systems, it's what happened to so many different sectors in America, which now don't work. And I'll be writing more about it this week. But it's very important to understand when you engage with the leadership on healthcare and education, it's important to know that this is about flipping all of the economic and equity valuation into the stock market and asserting direct control through digital and telecommunications and software systems. And if you look at who's doing it, whether it's popping the stock market or taking over the last part of local economies that you haven't taken over, or reengineering trillions of dollars of labor out of the process, or getting more direct control of people or children, the last thing on anybody's mind is really education or healthcare, because they're not trying to educate people and they're not trying to help people be healthy. Au contraire, and when you engage politically with someone, it's very important to understand their goals. And I think for many people in the healthcare system, or many people, particularly teachers in the educational system, they can't fathom the point of view of the people who essentially want to privatize and completely reorganize these functions. But I think it's important here at the Solari Report, we do everything we can to help you look at this from Mr. Global's point of view, because I think it helps you to understand how not only antithetical to your interests and your family's interests this is, but the fact that it is so completely nuts that ultimately it's not going to work, and you need to be able to make your plans accordingly. In closing, we've got a great lineup. James Turk is going to be with us next week. Then on May 28th, I've gotten many requests to talk about how to organize and launch a breakthrough technology product. And so I asked Mark Dancy, who's a wonderful Australian entrepreneur who's built and operated incubators and done a lot of breakthrough technology products, and I think has a real understanding of what some of the issues are. He'll join us on May 28th, and then June 4th, the wonderful Don Cox of Cox Advisors will be joining us to talk about the meaning of negative interest rates, and also I'll be asking him about commodities markets. Are we getting a turn in the commodities markets? Nobody knows those markets better than Don Cox. He's my go-to guy on commodities. That's going to be a fabulous interview. So I'm off to dinner and watching the Australian sunset. And so until next week, May 21st, with James Turk, please don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.